You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
It's a move that could signal a more optimistic pandemic outlook from California leadership. Earlier this past week, Governor Newsom said that he's getting ready to drop the state's COVID state of emergency, which he first declared all the way back in 2020 when the virus was first starting to spread. So how close are we to that long-awaited new normal? Welcome to KCBS In-Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Keith Manconi. Today in the program, well, we've sort of been getting mixed signals on the COVID front in recent months. On the one hand, we have the hopeful statements from politicians like Governor Newsom and President Biden, who just a few weeks ago declared that this pandemic is over. On the other hand, we have the all too familiar drumbeat of concerning news trickling out, new variants emerging, new surges predicted, new signs that some of our key COVID defenses might be eroding. And all the while, hundreds of people are still dying every day. So where exactly are we in this pandemic, if we should even call it that anymore? And what steps should we be taking to keep ourselves safe as we enter the colder months, not to mention the holiday season? Well, it's a set of questions that we've asked before on this program, but COVID safety is a moving target. So to bring us this updated look at COVID safety best practices and to re-answer your most pressing COVID questions, we're going to welcome back onto the program Dr. Robert Wachter, who is the chair of UC San Francisco's Department of Medicine. Dr. Robert Wachter, welcome back on the program.
Thanks so much, Keith. Thanks for having me.
So perhaps the most pressing question of all here is, help us understand, where are we on the COVID map? Lay out the terrain for us. Case counts remain low, but those are obviously unreliable at this point. Wastewater samples seem to be on the rise. And meantime, it feels like there's a new report every other day about some new variant that's causing alarm. For a lot of us, to be honest, I think this has all become sort of background noise at this point. So let's take this moment to check back in with this health crisis. How should us regular folks be thinking about the risks at this time?
Yeah, it is confusing. It always seems to be confusing. And this might be an unusually confusing time because we may be pivoting from an extraordinary period of stability to something that's a little bit more uncertain. I think the first point I'd want to make is the most surprising thing about the last 6 months has been the lack of surprises. If you think about the last 2.5 years, it's just been one surprise after another, whether it was a new variant coming on the scene or the politicization of vaccines and masks or spikes in surges in various places. When BA5 became a thing, which was in the spring, people like me kind of said, here's what I think is likely to happen for the next six months, but just caveat, you know, what if this happens, this will change. And basically not much has changed. So if you think about the past 6 months, it's been a period of relative stability with the main variant being the one that was here 6 months ago. We've seen sort of mini threats of other variants coming on the scene, but they all kind of faded away. We heard that the government and the manufacturers were going to shift to a new vaccine, a new booster, this bivalent booster. They made a choice to target it against BA5, which was a little bit risky. And it turned out that was a very good choice because that still is the variant in play. They said it will be out in September. I was very skeptical that it would be out in September. It was. So in some ways, the last 6 months have been quite stable and probably a version of the best it's going to be for the next several years, which is a little bit concerning because we all want this darn thing to go away completely. It's not going to go away. I think this last 6 months has been kind of a decent relative lull in the pandemic such that many of us are doing things that we didn't do before. I had a surprise birthday party indoors last night with 17 people, something I wouldn't have done. I didn't plan it, but I wouldn't have done 6 months ago. Where are we now? You know, threats of some new variants coming on the horizon. And with each of these, you know, they have characteristics that make you worry that they're going to be more immune evasive and therefore take over from BA5. I think it's too early to know whether they will. Winter's coming, which generally means somewhat of a surge. It's not that the virus is seasonal like the flu. It's just that people go inside and they change their activity. So we'll probably see at least a mild bump in cases for that reason. I'd say the biggest and most concerning signal is how few people have gotten the new booster. I think, you know, of all the things that we can do to keep ourselves safe, there's not much we can do about the variants, nothing we can do about a change in the weather. The one thing we can do is take the most up-to-date, incredibly safe vaccine to give ourselves the best shot of having immunity, preventing ourselves from both getting infected and from getting very, very sick. And the fact that so few people have taken it, I find amazing and also quite concerning. That's the thing that worries me the most.
Yeah, the uptake figure that Dr. Sarah Cody with Santa Clara County gave earlier this week was 11% of eligible residents had gotten it. So really, certainly not the uptake rate that health officials were hoping for. And there's a lot of threads to unpack in that story that you were just telling there. But I think it also sets a good foundation to talk a little bit about your own personal COVID risk choices. You have actually become a little bit of a Twitter celebrity talking about the COVID risk choices that you make and explaining the data that backs them up. I'm certainly among the people who have outsourced a great deal of my COVID thinking to your Twitter account, so I do thank you for that. And on that Twitter account, you made the announcement a few weeks back at this point, I guess, that you are now going to start indoor dining without a mask, and that in non-crowded indoor settings, you're going to go in there without a mask. So it sounds like this time of stability that you were sketching out there for us, that played into that decision to some degree?
Totally. The virus is the virus. The virus is as transmissible as it is, you know, as it's ever been. BA5 is actually quite transmissible. You know, if you're standing 5 feet away from somebody in a restaurant or in an indoor, you know, going shopping or whatever, the physics of that, you know, how well the virus spreads is basically, we know all about that. So the main variable that changes is what is the probability that a person standing next to me in line at the Safeway or my waiter or the person at the next table in a restaurant has COVID? That's really the main thing that changes. And it has changed massively over the course of the pandemic. So in January, there was a point where it was probably 10% that any one person who felt well might have COVID. That was the prevalence of the virus was so high. Mm-hmm. And now we're down to a number based on the number I like to follow, which is the asymptomatic test positivity rate at UCSF, which is basically people who come in because they broke a leg or they're in for open heart surgery. We test them. And so it's a pretty good, and to me, one of the most helpful measures of what is the chance that someone near you has COVID. That number is about 1%. So I think a couple of key points about that. That 1% is not zero. That means that at least using that number, the chances any one person who feels fine in San Francisco or the Bay Area has COVID is 1 in 100, not nothing. Now, if you're around, let's say 10 people, you're in a restaurant and you think about the people who are in airshot of you, your table mates, your waiter, and maybe people at the three adjacent tables. So let's say 10 people, the chances that one of them has COVID is 10%. If you get in an airplane with 150 people, the way the math works out is if any one person has 1% chance of having COVID, there's about a 75% chance that somebody on the plane has COVID. The way I put all of that together is that the risk of getting, if you're exposed to someone with COVID, obviously the risk, it's not 100% chance you're going to get it. Might be a 5 or 10% chance you get it. So the risk that any person around me has COVID is now low enough that when eating inside is the thing to do, I do it. So last night, my wife threw a surprise party for me. It was indoors. There were 17 people who I quite confident are vaccinated and up to date on their vaccines. We kept a window open, tried to do everything we could with ventilation. But it was I would not be shocked if I got COVID from that, but I thought the probability was low enough and the joy was high enough that that's what we all did. Hmm. I'm going out tonight with a bunch of our residents at UCSF. We're eating outside. I went out last week with a group of faculty. We ate outside. So when it's kind of neutral and you can do outside as easily as inside, why take any risk at all? If I go into a store and I'm the only person there and I've left my mask in the car, I'll just be without a mask and feel pretty good about it. But if I go shopping in the Safeway, as I did this weekend, I'm going to wear a mask. If I get an airplane, I'm going to wear a mask. At times where I don't need to take a risk, I feel like why not continue to be safe? But I do think the case rate is low enough that it's reasonably safe to take the mask off, in particularly in non-crowded indoor spaces. And, you know, life is about taking some risks. You know, you wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. You wouldn't get on the highway to drive if you said, I'm not going to take any risks at all. So to me, the risks have fallen to a point where I'm comfortable taking them, although I prefer not to. And I still am moderately careful in a lot of things that I do.
Yeah, it's that same cost-benefit analysis that we've all been trying to run in our heads for the past more than 2.5 years at this point. And I guess the calculus has shifted a little bit. Real quick, going to reintroduce you again. This is KCBS In Depth, your weekly deep dive into the events and trends shaping life in the Bay Area and beyond. I'm Keith Manconi. Today, we are dipping back into the COVID science to get our bearings as the experts warn that another winter surge could be on the horizon. Laying it all out for us, we're speaking right now with Dr. Robert Wachter, once again, the chair of UC San Francisco's Department of Medicine. Okay, so that's a good sense of where we've been for the past several months at this point, a relatively positive time in our COVID history. We didn't have something similar to the Delta surge that we saw last summer, the summer of 2021. But now we are beginning to hear these warnings that a winter surge could be ahead of us. We have these new variants that are getting a lot of attention. What are you paying attention to at this moment?
I'm certainly watching them and watching what's happening in Europe and Singapore, where those variants seem to be. Basically, it's a race between a variant and BA5, the existing variant. And a variant needs to not.
We should say BA5 is from the lineage of Omicron.
Correct. So so are all the new variants. So there's no variant that appears to be on the horizon that is a whole new ball game as Omicron was, and threatens potentially to, massively sidestep our immunity, whether your immunity came from vaccines and boosters or infection or both. And by this point, by the way, there's essentially no one who has no immunity. Mm-hmm. You think about 2.5 years ago, there's no one who had any immunity against SARS-CoV-2. Now, if you haven't gotten vaccinated, you've almost certainly gotten infected. And so everybody brings to the table some level of immunity. So I'm watching these variants to see whether they break out and become the dominant variant abroad, and then very carefully watching the CDC data to see whether they're becoming the dominant variant in the U.S. and particularly in California. And the answer is there's some uptick in the BQ1 variant, which is a little bit more immune evasive than BA5. And if it becomes the dominant variant, it will probably drive a modest surge. Do you have to do anything about these variants? There's not much you can do other than be prepared with as much immunity as you can. And that's quite simple. I mean, that is getting the new booster. And, you know, people are kind of waiting on it, waiting for the holidays. I think this is sort of like an amateur trying to time the stock market. I think, you know, at this point, you should just get it and have it on board. It's going to last at least through the holidays in terms of its level of protection against infection. It will last far longer than that in terms of its level of protection against severe infection. And because the variants that we're tracking all come from Omicron lineage, there's no reason to believe that the vaccine won't work reasonably well against them, although it's possible they won't work as well against them as they're working against BA5. So worth tracking. I don't, you know, it's until they become the dominant variants in your region and until you then see an uptick in cases, you know, it's more, it's interesting, it's important to follow them, but I don't think it should change anybody's behavior. It's, or it doesn't change the facts on the ground until they're leading to a surge in cases.
Yeah, so there is a tipping point for you, still worth watching the numbers. I mean, what should average residents be looking out for? I don't think that the average person is going to be poring over the wastewater returns that are actually, I believe, are actually posted by some county governments. But
they are, yes.
I can't imagine that being how people choose to spend their evenings. So what would be your advice for what people should be looking out for to know when it might be time to reconsider some of these behaviors?
The number I like to use, which is readily accessible to the public, is the number of cases per 100,000 people in your region per day. And that number, I sort of like it to be below 5 and certainly below 10. Number is easily findable. If you go to New York Times, COVID, and California, you'll see the number of cases per 100,000 per day in every county of California, or you name the other state that you're going to. And that's the number that I tend to follow. It can change a little bit someday. Some days there's a dump of new cases into the database that changes the number. But that number in most of California is about 10 today. In San Francisco, it's been running about 4 or 5. It's a little bit higher today. But it's in that range, 5 to 10 or below cases per 100,000 per day. What does that mean? It's an underestimate of the true number of cases, and because the true number of cases are not reflected in that number because of all the home testing. But it tends to correlate quite well with the number that I follow at UCSF that's not publicly available, this asymptomatic test positivity rate. If that number is 5 to 10 per day, it tends to mean that there's about a 1 in 100 chance or below that any individual person who feels fine will have COVID. And at least to me, that's a threshold number. That's a number kind of that means that the risk is low enough that I'm going to get it from a 1 hour indoor encounter. And it's okay to be, to at least to my risk tolerance, okay to accept some risk. If that number starts going up to 15 to 20, and again, totally accessible, you go on the website and find it easily, then I would stop doing indoor dining and I would be wearing the mask in pretty much every indoor setting.
All right. Well, I do want to get a little bit more into specific advice for how people should be thinking about a few different decisions that they're going to have to be making soon. But just to finish out our sketch of the landscape that we're on, I want to circle back to where we started with, which is with what politicians have been saying in recent weeks, namely Governor Newsom, President Biden. We have heard from Governor Newsom that we are going to drop this state of emergency over COVID early next year. And then a few weeks earlier than that, we heard from President Biden that the pandemic is over. He also said, quote, we still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it, but the pandemic is over. So curious for your response to what we're hearing from the political end of the world. How well is that reflecting the reality that you're seeing?
I think reasonably well. I think clearly the definition of pandemic is kind of fuzzy. And it was clear we were in a pandemic in 2020. You have a new novel agent. No one in the world has immunity to it. It is surging. It's killing people left and right. We don't have treatments. We don't have testing. It is, you know, incredibly challenging, uncertain situation. That's everybody, and it's worldwide. Everybody would say we're in a pandemic. Coming out of a pandemic, there's really no clear definition. It's sort of you reach a stage of stability where things are not changing rapidly, where people have the tools, by and large, to keep themselves safe. There might be small surges here and there, but no massive surges. And at that point, you're no longer in what most experts would call a pandemic. It really is just a word in a way. You're still in a situation where a lot of people are getting this virus. It's bad. You'd prefer not to. It's killing a fair number of people, still 350 a day in the United States. So there's no bright line between pandemic and non-pandemic. I think you do have to begin moving back to a less emergent stance because people and societies can't be vigilant or hypervigilant forever. They've got to sort of focus on some other things as well. And the trick is, can you do that while also realistically saying, COVID's not over. There's still plenty of COVID around. It still carries a risk. You still don't want to get it. You still should do everything you can do to stay safe. The government should still fund research appropriately. There may be some policies that are appropriate. So I think what the governor did is perfectly fine. What the president did, I know, surprised all of his advisors in the White House. They had not talked about this. They were as surprised as anybody. And I thought the timing was bad. And the timing was bad because it was sort of, it was the week they were rolling out the new vaccine. And I mean, you don't want to shift your language to try to promote a certain kind of behavior. But because it's a little bit of an arbitrary call when you say the pandemic is over, it's like, why don't you wait a month or two after this new vaccine that you really want people to get before you say that? Because, there is no bright line. So I wish he'd waited on that. But the general point is true for policymakers and it's true for individuals. We were all in sort of hyper alert DEFCON 5 state for the past 2 years. And it's actually pretty hard to transition back to how do we truly weigh the risks and benefits and how do we sort of go back to some version of 2019 life without saying foolishly that this thing is gone, I don't have to worry about it at all, because it's not gone and you do have to worry about it. And as we're all seeing, that's a pretty tough thing to do. For some people, the only way they can do it is just say, it's over, never going to wear a mask again, I'm just going to do what I did and sort of let the chips fall. I think that's a mistake. But it's also a mistake to say, I'm going to remain hyper careful, because if you're remaining hyper careful now, I'm not sure what's going to get you out of it. Because I think this is about as benign as things are likely to be for at least the next several years. So it's a tough time for people to make those choices when we're so used to being kind of, you know, hiding under our kitchen table.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think finding that way to chart that middle path is something that a lot of us are struggling with right now. And we're going to dig into some of the questions that folks are asking in just a second. Real quick, going to reintroduce you one last time. This is KCBS In Depth. I'm Keith Manconi, talking right now about COVID booster shots, new medications, and wastewater surveillance. In other words, everything you need to know as we head into the winter months and once again face the possibility of rising case counts. Joining us, we're speaking right now with Dr. Robert Wachter, chair of UC San Francisco's Department of Medicine. So you brought up the reformulated COVID booster shots. And when those shots began rolling out, it was made clear that the full extent of their efficacy was not completely understood, because we were really trying to get this out in time for the fall and possible winter increase in cases, get that protection there. And so we are learning now, I would think, a little bit more about how these shots are working in practice. How much data have we gotten in? What have we learned at this point?
Not much. I think we're still a little bit flying blind, and yet we can say with a fairly high level of assuredness how they're going to work, based on what we know about the prior vaccines, based on what we know about how well this new vaccine elicits antibodies against BA5 and how long they last. So, I mean, we know this vaccine and this booster is entirely safe. It's the same platform that we've now given to billions of people around the world. And the side effect profile is very clear. The extraordinary safety of the vaccine, I think, is incredibly clear. Yes, we do know that a relatively small number of people, particularly men between about ages 18 and 35, can get this heart inflammation. It tends to be quite mild. It goes away on its own. And their chances of getting heart inflammation from a COVID infection are far higher than your chance of getting COVID, of getting it from the vaccine. So to me, it does not change the risk-benefit equation for even young men. And I have two sons in that age group, and I strongly encourage them to get vaccinated, boosted, and to get the latest booster. The hope is that the new reformulation leads to a longer period of protection against getting COVID. Mm-hmm. This has gotten very confusing to people. The vaccines have worked extraordinarily well in preventing severe COVID, and it's the reason that so few people are dying of COVID now. And they last for a long time in terms of preventing severe COVID, hospitalization, and death. But the period of protection against getting COVID First of all, it's not complete protection. We all know that because we see all these breakthrough cases. But second of all, the period of protection against getting COVID only lasted a couple of months for the last booster or two. So the hope is this will last longer. I don't think we know the answer to that. I'm going to guess that it will, but longer means sort of 3 or 4 months, not two. I think that would be the best guess. And that may change if new variants come in that are a little bit more resistant to it. But if you weigh all of it together, if you have gotten your last shot of immunity more than 6 months ago, whether that was from a true shot, a vaccine, a booster, or an infection, your protection against getting infected has waned to almost zero. Your protection against getting severely ill has waned as well, although not to zero. And the benefits of getting this new booster massively outweigh the risks. So I think you should do it.
And so the way that we should think about this is sort of akin to an annual flu shot, in that the shot itself is largely similar. It's just reformulated to target new strains of the virus as it evolves. Is that an analogy people could keep in their heads?
Yeah, I think the White House pushed that analogy a couple of months ago. And it confused people a little bit because the annual flu shot, part of the flu shot only lasts for about 4 or 5 months, but it only needs to last for 4 or 5 months because that's how long flu lasts. Flu is truly seasonal. COVID is not. But I think what they were trying to get across, and it's not it's a reasonable point, is if we can just get everybody to take one shot a year, then the level of protection that the entire society will have against severe cases and death will be very high because the shot lasts that long in terms of protecting you against severe cases. What it doesn't do, and I don't think it will do, is last a year in terms of protecting you against COVID, against getting a case of COVID. And I don't want to get a case of COVID, mostly because I'm fearful of long COVID, not so much fearful of dying from COVID anymore. And so I'm guessing that if we can just have a national strategy and a culture where people go on for their yearly flu shot and their yearly COVID shot, the level of societal protection from that will be terrific. It may very well be that for someone over 70 or 75, or someone with other medical illnesses that puts them at higher risk, or someone who just wants to be safer, they can get and should get another booster every 6 months to make sure that their level of protection against infection stays high. But for the average person at low to medium risk, if you can get just this shot once a year, you're going to be in pretty good shape in terms of protection against getting a severe case and dying.
All right. Well, all very useful information and a good reorientation as we find out what the next chapter of this pandemic, or perhaps non-pandemic at this point, has in store for us. We have been speaking one last time to Dr. Robert Wachter, once again, the chair of UC San Francisco's Department of Medicine. Dr. Robert Wachter, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Keith. Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for listening for KCBS and In Depth. I'm Keith Mancone. Stay safe, be well. Talk again next week.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.